Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Monday, September 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe President Mnangagwa will be inaugurated today, Monday, but some are calling for transitional government.
The major task of the transitional government would be to initiate a reform agenda on the political front, in particular to restore constitutionalism.
We'll hear from some Zimbabweans about today's ceremony. Gabon's military strongman will be sworn in today, Monday, as the country's new leader after overthrowing President Ali Bongo last Wednesday. Nigeria's President Tinubu recalls all the country's ambassadors except two. A state-led investigation finds that South Africa did not ship weapons to Russia. Africa Climate Week begins in Nairobi, Kenya, today, Monday.
A summit coming after the Paris summit, where greater clarity emerged, will be a critical opportunity for us to accelerate global energy transition and deliver African solutions to the COP28 in Dubai.
And Somalia mobilizing for a new offensive against Al-Shabaab. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa will be inaugurated today, Monday, after being declared winner of the August 23 elections over opposition candidate Nelson Chamisa. But many international observers, including the Southern African Development Community, SADC, say the elections did not meet regional guidelines governing democratic elections. Ibo Mandeza is a researcher at the Southern Africa Political Economist series. He and his colleague Tony Rilo have petitioned SADC and the African Union to support the idea of a transitional government in Zimbabwe to end what they call political impasse. Mandeza tells me that such a government must be supervised by eminent persons named by SADC.
The document states three things. The first is that we say the election was largely flawed, and we agree that under normal circumstances, it declared null and void. The irregularities were so blatant. The SADC report, therefore, in our view, is correct, as in fact all the observer reports returned a negative verdict on the election. The second thing that we state in our document is that we differ with the opposition movement, CCC. We're calling for a rerun. We are saying it's futile to have a rerun when the same conditions that have yielded negative results over the years remain in place. So there's need for reform. And therefore, we have always proposed, ever since 2016, some of us, that only a transitional government made up of the main political parties, ZANU-PF and CCC, but also the smaller parties and civil society. And the third thing we're saying is that the transitional government must be mediated, or must be an outcome of the mediation of eminent persons, being former presidents. And we are saying that the major task of the transitional government would be to initiate a reform agenda on the political front, in particular to restore constitutionalism.
But President Mnangagwa and the ruling ZANU-PF say that the elections were free and fair, and that proposals like yours are inviting trouble in Zimbabwe.
They didn't say that. There's been no rejection of our petition by anybody.
What I mean is that they say that the elections were free and fair. If that is the case, then why have a transition government?
Well, I mean, they're bound to say that, but they are in a spot, in the sense that under the SADC protocols, the election has been condemned. And even though the inauguration is going through, it's clear that the SADC report is a subject of discussion in SADC itself. I should remind you that the same thing happened in 2008, where elections were stolen. In fact, Mugabe lost the election and proceeded to engineer a runoff. And Mugabe was hurriedly sworn in before the AU summit to discuss the Zimbabwe crisis. And you know what happened. A GNU was instituted soon after that. So what I'm saying, basically, it is possible that, in my view, the only way forward is the transitional government.
Once again, as I said, your proposal is very interesting. But let me ask you also, why have elections, therefore, if the losing candidate would be requesting a transitional government?
Well, I don't know what the position of the losing candidate is, if there is a losing candidate. We're not picked on behalf of the opposition, by the way. This is a non-partisan initiative which is seeking to draw and develop a consensus, a national consensus in the country.
Ibo Mendaza is a researcher at the Southern Africa Political Economy Series. He was speaking with me from Harare. As you just heard in our previous report, Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa will be inaugurated today, Monday. Reporter Rutendo Manwere in Harare asked some Zimbabweans for their thoughts about today's occasion.
We are not really as excited as we were in 2018. At this point, as the Harare Residents Trust, we expect that the president and his team are revolutionary in their approaches, that they take a no-nonsense approach to addressing the inefficiencies in the economy.
I was one of the voters in the city, and I had to endure very long hours standing in a queue. I feel that we were denied chances to actually vote for the candidate of our choice. So the inauguration is not anything exciting. It is inauguration of someone that we feel is a cheat.
There's nothing to celebrate on EG's inauguration tomorrow, because Mnangagwa stole the will of the people on the 23rd of August. If Mnangagwa had clearly won the election like what he said, would have seen millions of people in the streets celebrating his victory, the 52% that he claims, but no one is celebrating. So my big question to Mr. Mnangagwa, who voted for you when there is no one is celebrating your victory?
I don't feel any excitement about the event since he was the previous elected president for the past 5 years. So we didn't benefit much from him, especially us as youth. As youth, we are still struggling to find jobs.
The views of some Zimbabweans about today's inauguration of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Gabon's military strongman, General Brice Nguema, will be sworn in today, Monday, as the country's new leader after overthrowing President Ali Bongo Ondimba last Wednesday and placing him under house arrest. The general reopened the country's borders over the weekend. He said he will not repeat past mistakes by rushing to hold elections. Frank Jokting is a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist. He tells me that civil society is so far satisfied with General Nguema's promises, including rewriting the country's 1991 constitution to better serve the people and restrict his time in office to no more than 2 years.
The latest is that the military took power, and now they are trying to talk to everybody. So the civil society, they're talking also to the politicians, they're talking to whoever is interested in the well-being of Gabon and the well-being of the Gabonese people. And from there, they are trying to redo the constitution. If I heard them carefully, they tried to pick up the constitution of 1991, but they're going to adjust it a little bit better in order to make sure that no one will take advantage or will twist it or change it the way that they've been changed for a couple of years for personal interest. And so it seems that the country is calm. The people are still rejoicing because, like I said, we've been under the rule of one family for almost 5 decades. They found 500 billions of franc CFA that they were able to recover. So he promised that he will take care of their retired people, because in Gabon, for those couple of months, people who retired were not paid their due. So he said that that's the first thing he's going to do on Monday. Now there's a lot of going on, but I'm hoping that everything will continue to go well and that the Gabonese people in the long run will be satisfied.
So, as we said, the military leader will be sworn in on Monday. He said over the weekend that he will not be rushed to get to elections, even though everyone, including the African Union, are saying that the military needs to turn the country over to democratic rule. It seems to me what you're saying, there's some satisfaction among you, the civil society and opposition people, based on his promises.
Well, I think the civil society are satisfied. I don't know if the opposition is satisfied, but like he said, right now there's no majority and there's no opposition. We are all Gabonese, and what he's trying to do is that he's trying to put back Gabon to his feet, because everything has been really neglected. I know also that he said that he will not be rushed, but at the same time, he said that he's not interested in governing Gabon per se, but he's interested in putting Gabon back on track. And as soon as that process is going to be done, what I'm hearing is 2 years max, minimum a year. So we need that time in order to give it back to civilians. And the other things that I want to say is that the army is supposed to protect a nation and is supposed to protect the goods of that nation. I think he's conscious of that. So even though he will have a year or 2 years to do whatever he wants to do, I think that there will be some politician involved. There will be civil society also involved. So I don't think it's the army that will govern on those 1 or 2 years alone.
Frank Joktin is a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist. He was speaking with me from Toulouse, France. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, September 4th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley's Sports. President Bola Tinubu of Nigeria has recalled all the country's Korea and North Korea ambassadors from their posts. Al-Kassim Abdul-Kadir is the Special Assistant and Communication Strategist of the Nigerian Foreign Ministry. He says President Tinubu is recalling all the diplomats except for the permanent representatives to the United Nations and Geneva because the president wants to recalibrate Nigeria's foreign policy. Abdul-Kadir tells me that the diplomats have until October 31 to conclude their activities and return home.
It's a routine in places like Nigeria for a new president to feel the pulse of his foreign policy by appointing people that he's comfortable with to sell his vision in Nigerian missions abroad. So President Bola Ahmed Tinubu at the moment wants to recalibrate Nigeria's foreign policy thrust. He also wants to recalibrate Nigeria's foreign missions abroad. And he has decided to recall them so that he can rejig these postings moving forward.
Well, the recall of all Korea and North Korea ambassadors, that is a lot of diplomats. Is there a particular timeline for the recall to take effect and conclude?
Yes, because again, when you have these envoys abroad, there's usually a lot of work that they're involved in. There are lots of bilateral and multilateral agreements that they're working on, lots of consular services and the rest of it. So what the president has decided to do is to give them the grace of between now and October 31st for them to round up their work and activities and return to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs headquarters in Abuja latest by the 31st of October.
But the United Nations General Assembly is this month. What happens?
Yes, that's why the Nigerian ambassador to the United States and the permanent representative of the United Nations have been exempted from this recall, so that they can be able to oversee Nigeria's agenda at the UN General Assembly.
Do we have any figure in terms of the number of ambassadors and non-Korea ambassadors we are talking about?
I think that there are about 100.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you very much.
Al-Kassim Abdul-Kadir is the Special Assistant and Communication Strategist of the Nigerian Foreign Ministry. He was speaking with me from Abuja. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says an independent investigation has found that South Africa did not ship weapons to Russia, according to Reuters. The probe was started after the U.S. ambassador to South Africa said in May that a Russian cargo ship had uploaded weapons at a naval base in Cape Town in December. Ramaphosa said in a speech to the nation on Sunday that the allegation had a damaging effect on South Africa's economy. Professor Sipho Sipe is the former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He tells me that he's not surprised by the conclusion, since in this case, South Africa was investigating itself.
You need to understand that because we're dealing with defense-related issues, there'll always be a sense of secrecy And effectively, no government will give information to the investigators that they will end up casting that government in a bad light. Investigators in this case, who are not defense people, will only make a determination on what they are given. And the point is that as long as you are outside the defense environment, you will not know the whole truth. But we have come to a situation where the government was very peeved by the fact that the ambassador had suggested that we were selling arms to Russia because it would have some political consequences to South Africa's trading partners who are opposed to the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. So doing that, this is more about tap dancing. But what we also know, we've reached a stage where the law enforcement agencies, where the heads of those have been appointed by the current administration, have been unwilling to come and find anything wrong that involves the president and his administration. So anything that will cast Ramaphosa in a good light is what you are going to find.
Professor, but could it be also that perhaps the investigators truly did not find anything, or that South Africa did not ship weapons? Could it be?
Well, if you have a government that has no integrity, on what basis do you come to that? Until you have a full report and you know what was submitted or not submitted, you will not be in a position to make that determination.
Professor Sipho Sipe is a political analyst and a former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg. World leaders are gathering in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, for today's opening of the Africa Climate Summit. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
More than 12,000 delegates have been accredited for the conference and for Africa Climate Week. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is among the high-profile dignitaries who have confirmed attendance at the Africa Climate Summit scheduled for September 4th to 6th in Nairobi. Kenya and African Union have made progress in preparing for the successful hosting of the historic African Climate Action Summit. The meeting aims to position Africa in solidarity with the rest of the world for managing the climate crisis. Earlier, Kenya's President William Ruto said that the summit's agenda will focus on mobilizing towards a common position and advocate for a global alignment on a green growth agenda.
It is important for us to pay special attention to the Africa Climate Summit, the first ever in our continent under the AU. The summit, coming after the Paris summit where greater clarity emerged, will be a critical opportunity for us to accelerate global energy transition and deliver African solutions to the COP28 in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates.
Among the topics that will be discussed are redesigning climate finance, trade and investment for the global south, the investment opportunity for food sovereignty in Africa, and accelerating climate-resilient water investments in Africa. The Nairobi Declaration on Green Growth and Climate Finance Solutions seeks to launch a renewed effort for Africa and invite partnerships with the rest of the world. The Chief Executive Officer of the African Climate Summit, Joseph Nganga, says the meeting will address the challenges faced by climate change globally.
We expect that in addition to discussing the issues, we will also portray the solutions, but even go further and show the opportunities for investment that are being signed or are close to being signed to unlock those challenges.
The Africa Climate Summit will bring together leaders across the globe, intergovernmental organizations, private sector and academia, civil society organizations, women and youth, to design and accelerate actions and solutions for climate change in Africa. The meeting will provide a platform to deliberate on the link between climate change, Africa's development reality, and the need to push for increased investment in climate action globally. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
Somalia's President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed arrived in the frontline town of Mahas in the central Hiran region on Sunday to mobilize government troops and local fighters. The effort followed last week's military setback when troops retreated from several towns after Al-Shabaab carried out a deadly attack, killing dozens of government soldiers. Abdi Rizak Omar Mohammed is a local MP and the Minister for Petroleum and Minerals. Reporter Harun Maruf of the U.S. Somali Language Service asked him about the military preparations.
Well, the preparations have already started. It started in Galmudug, and the president has moved to Mahas to also mobilize the local community to take guns and to fight against Al-Shabaab. And today was the first day that he came. He was having consultations with member of parliament who hail from these regions. He will also be meeting with some of the army officers who will be leading the fight.
And what's going to happen in the next few days? When is the relaunch of the military offensive is going to take place?
Well, as soon as the mobilization ends, I'm very hopeful that the president will make that decision to relaunch the fight against Al-Shabaab. And Mahas being a very important location and a location where Al-Shabaab was defeated almost 7-8 months ago, we are hopeful that within days, within week, maybe we will be seeing the relaunch of the fight against Al-Shabaab.
Abdi Rizak Omar Mohammed is a local Somali MP and Minister for Petroleum and Mineral. He spoke with reporter Harun Maruf of the U.S. Somali Language Service. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in Nigeria, where the Super Eagles coach Jose Pesero will continue as Nigeria head coach despite agreeing to a pay cut. The Nigerian Football Federation on Sunday announced that the 63-year-old will now lead Nigeria to the Africa Cup of Nations after his initial one-year contract ran out in July. His initial contract paid him $70,000 a month, but it is understood the new agreement will have his monthly pay at $50,000 after the Federation said they could no longer afford his previous salary. He has been handed the target of leading the Super Eagles to at least the semi-finals of the Africa Cup of Nations to be hosted by the Ivory Coast in January. In athletics, Uganda Vitalis Quimoi and Chimos Viola Mureya were winners in the second edition of the Mount Wenzori Marathon that took place in the scenic town of Kasese, Uganda on Saturday. The Rwenzori mountain ranges, known for their breathtaking beauty, provided a stunning backdrop to the marathon, drawing 2,000 participants from 13 countries, including famous international sports commentator Rob Walker.
I can see the potential in this event. It's going to be a big, big part of promoting this area of Uganda going forward, because we need people to know that Uganda has mountains.
Vitalis Kimoi clocked 2 hours, 17 minutes and 21 seconds to beat second place Bernard Cheptoy, who clocked a time of 2 hours, 17 minutes, 22 seconds. Shetrack Kimayo clocked 2 hours, 17 minutes, 37 seconds to take bronze. Kimoi said it was indeed a difficult race.
The race was too tough because going was a little bit hard, but coming back was a little bit slow. And I'm not used to wear slow. I'm a little bit faster in hill work, in the hill.
In the women's category, Viola Chemos Munrewa won in 2 hours, 49 minutes, 3 seconds. Winners of the marathon got $750. In volleyball news, the African Men's Volleyball Championship, the continent's premier volleyball competition for senior men's national volleyball teams of Africa, got underway on Sunday in Egypt. 15 African countries are participating in the biennial event. The tournament will also serve as the 2024 Olympic qualifiers. In tennis news, Ons Jabeur survived a massive scare in the third round of the U.S. Open after overcoming illness and a litany of unforced errors to beat an injured Maria Boazukova in 3 sets. The Tunisian's opponent played a large chunk of the match virtually on one leg and looked as if she could defy injury to prevail before Jabeur rallied to seal a 5-7, 7-6, 6-3 victory in just under 3 hours. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson
Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, September 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. I am James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.